Oh my gosh, yeah, I'm very excited to have you here. I invited you to share a bath with me because I've been listening to your podcast. Someone gave me your card a long time ago, like a year and a half ago, and there was just something about it relating to the fact that I'm raising teenagers at a time where, honestly, I did not grow up in the world that they grew up in.
100%.
Not even like slightly relatable. So I was like, I'm just going to give this a go. I'm just going to see what is this podcast going to offer me. And I have been so grateful to dip in and out. And also your writing as well, which, again, I'm dyslexic and I find that reading sometimes can be quite stressful. But your writing and the way that your Substack just appears at the right time and it's the right topic and the way that you communicate, I love it. And I have just been asking all teenagers, parents of teenagers, please get involved in this. Please listen to it because we need it.
Yes, well, that's the thing. And I feel like I'm 57, so I've come from an era which was, sorry, I'm squeezing your lemons, Lula.
That's what they're there for.
You know, it was Thatcher came in when I was first in the UK and her idea was basically there is no society, there's only families and individuals.
Yeah.
And I think we all just sucked that up. I know a lot of people fought back, but I think it shifted the narrative, and I think that happened over in America too. And so I think we've sort of, it's been like that frog in hot water where it just didn't, we didn't notice how much we were losing when we were losing community. And I think as parents, we are now the people who are, you know, looking around going, wow, you know, there literally is nothing that, and it's not just that we're not being supported. It's not that we don't have a village, there's that, but it's also that all the things in society that would give our kids a value system and where we didn't have to parent alone because other parts of our society would be doing all that work, we're having to do it. And that's why you get people who helicopter parent. That's why you get people who throw their hands up and go, I don't know what to do, because it's so overwhelming. And it wasn't like this. It's always been difficult, but not like this.
So breakdown of community is a big part, do you
think? I think it really is. And I think that, you know, Jennifer Brenny Wallace, when I interviewed her about mattering, you know, she talks about the 70s where people would go around to people's houses unasked and they would just knock on the door and say, hey, I was just passing.
Yeah.
And, you know, as my parents would be horrified by that. And so I picked up on that, went, oh, you know, why do we want people just popping around? No, that's awful.
Yeah.
Because my parents weren't a community type people. They moved around all the time. I didn't understand what a community meant or why it would have any relevance to my life.
Yeah.
So I also had that as a backdrop. And I just think, you know, when I look back to the extent to which if you were living in an estate or somewhere, you would be playing in the streets. There would be a constant, you know, noise of people running around, moving. And even by the time my kids were little, so my kids, mine and, yeah, well, I've got a 31-year-old, 28, 19, and a 17-year-old.
Right.
But when they were younger, this was already changing. And if you had your kids out and allowing them to play in a playground on their own without actually supervising them, you risked them somebody calling the school and complaining about you.
Yeah. And much more fear-led.
Very different.
Yeah, fear-led.
Very and different.
Yeah, I absolutely resonate with that. Did you yourself socialise and go out and kind of buck the culture of your parents, or did you very much fall under that culture that your parents were raising you in?
Well, my parents didn't really raise me in a culture. I think my parents were clinging on for dear life with what they would do because everything was not working for them. So I don't blame them for the way that they parented me. I think that some parents just have a really tough time of it, and they you know, there are circumstances that don't work. I think that when I became a parent, I was living in London, in central London. I had been a career woman for a very long time, and I had nobody around me having children.
Wow. Did you plan becoming a parent? Was it
planned? Yes. Yes and no. Yeah, like, I always knew I wanted children, but I didn't know how that was going to happen, and I didn't know, and I thought, I'm not going to have children with the wrong person. So I had met my husband. We were together for 4 years before we got married, and he already had a previous relationship that had broken down and children from that relationship. And I think I basically said to him, well, my time is running out. So I'm either going to move on and find somebody who wants to have children with me, or it's going to be
nice.
So sort of, it was kind of that. And that's, and I think that happens to a lot more than people even say. You know, a lot of people who have this sort of myth about how beautiful their wedding proposal was. And I've spoken to lots of women my age who've gone, I kind of bounced him into it because I just went, you know, I'm going to have kids. So
he needed that.
Is it you or not? Yes.
Yeah, he needed that encouragement.
But I think because I was older, I mean, my first daughter was born when so I have four, but two of them are bonus daughters. So they come from his previous marriage. I've known them since they were very little.
And they're the oldest two.
They're the oldest two. Yeah. So the 28-year-old I met when she was just before she was three.
Wow.
So I've known them the whole...
Yeah.
I've known them growing
Amazing
up.
Amazing. That influence.
But I think I kind of didn't know how to do any of it. So I hid... Like, even when I was about to give birth, so a week before I was about to give birth, I'd brought home this kind of hammock thing, because I do things my own way, you know, that I was going to set up, and I'd set it up in the sitting room. You know, we had this small flat in London. And my husband walked in and went, "What's that?" And I said, it's a hammock for the baby. And I went, you know, this isn't flatulence. Like, this is going to happen. This is going to be a baby. And I think he was a bit kind of, you know, and I think,
he had that moment of waking.
So I think both of us were a bit sort of, I had kind of pushed it to the side. And I think I did too much of that, like not really acknowledging what was going on and how parenting works. But at the same time, I read every parenting book I could find. So when I started working for Parent Gym, which I was nudged to do by a friend of mine, and that's kind of coaching parents in inner city London. When I tried out for that, I turned up and they said, what I want you to do is, we've got all this material here. You need to turn it into a presentation. You've got 10 minutes to prepare it, and then you need to prepare it, present it to us. And I'm like, no problem. Yeah. You know, I'm a presenter by background.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I went, oh yeah, that's from this book. That's from this book. That's from, and I knew every single book, every one of the things had come from because I'd read so much.
You consumed it.
But I did not know how to reach out for help. I didn't understand that side of it. Like, how do you connect with other people and share how difficult this is. That was what was missing.
That's mega, because I think one thing I've noticed, we were living away in Spain for 7 years, and we've just come back 18 months ago. The things I noticed before I left are even more pronounced now. And one of them is this fear to say I'm not okay. And this on one hand, you could think, oh, I think surely we're much better at it. But actually, underneath, we're still really afraid of being judged, or that we haven't got it right, or that we're not good enough, or that means we're failing. And I just feel that this is a tragedy, that we can't actually say, this is really difficult, I need help.
Don't you think that's partly to do with the perfectionist culture online? I think online has shifted that. And that's one of the things where people talk about online and they talk about the harms, and I do a lot of work looking at what's going on, but my big thing is that it's shifted our value systems and our narrative in a way that we're often not conscious of.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. How do we avoid that then?
I think we say it to people. I think what we do is we just say to we create spaces where that's okay. And I think one of the best things to do is start small and build it, which is what I'm trying to do. So like I've set up a monthly big hug for local parents. And I've said, look, this is...
Lovely.
And I contacted an old age person's home. It wasn't just my idea. There was an amazing woman who lives in my community who does this for women in the menopause. And she asked me to come in and do a talk. And I thought, this is fantastic. This is what we need. Free spaces where people can come and talk. And so I've done the same with this old folks home, who said, look, we'll host you, we'll sponsor it and produce posters and things, and then everybody can come and meet up once a month, and talk about exactly what sort of things are happening. And because I've done the coaching in London, I know how to guide a group like that to make sure it's non-judgmental and that it feels safe.
Yeah.
Because the biggest problem is as soon as people say something, if people turn and then there's something inside them that goes, oh, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
No, you... And actually, my job is to say to people, where's that coming from?
Yes,
actually,
nice.
Rather than letting you get that rip, just think, ooh.
What is that within you?
Yeah, because it will be a narrative you'll have heard when you were younger, or a fear that you've got. And actually, I think parenting starts with us, clearly, like our children, they pick up on everything from us. And if they're not okay, it's probably because we're not okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's trying to get that message across that actually we need to look after ourselves.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand that when I first started the podcast.
Right. Wow.
Didn't get it.
That's something you've learned.
Didn't fully get it, no.
So the podcast has really given you that gift.
Oh my God. It's complete. I would say I would be universally screwing up if I was not doing this podcast. And
oh, wow.
So, you know, it's impacted my relationship with my older daughters and helped them, because I think I've learned the language to explain to them how I see things, because I wasn't explaining myself properly before.
Right.
And so I don't think they felt safe with me, and they feel much safer with me now.
Yeah.
I hope they would say that.
Yeah.
And with my younger daughters, particularly my youngest, I learned how to, because she really struggled, because she's neurodivergent and the world isn't really accommodating for people like her.
Mm.
And I don't see this as a failing. I see this as her not being understood.
Mm-hmm.
And when things were going horribly wrong, I just did what I told people to do. You know, when your rules aren't working, when your boundaries aren't working, bring them home.
Mm.
Spend all your time that you have with them and give them a rhythm in their life. Give them, shrink their world to something really small.
Yeah.
So that it's manageable and they can tune into who they are again.
Lovely.
And doing that slowly built her back up again. She's flourishing now.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have known that.
No. I love this. Mm. And actually, I really resonate, because we've had to do the same with one of our daughters as well. Just bring everything back down to what matters today and what matters for your nervous system.
Yes.
And let's just create that. Nothing else is important right now.
Yes.
It's about connection, communication and community. You know? Right here, right now, who are you in this moment? And then you build on that, don't you?
Yeah.
And I love what you shared about, in fact, I think you've said this before, because I've come away from one of your podcasts.
I will repeat myself a lot.
But I love, good, because we need to hear it, you know, and it needs to deepen in us. And the message of, we have to parent ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
If we, you know, and I say this in my day job as well, a lot, like, work on work on me, work on ourselves. The byproduct of that is that they will feel it, see it, and absorb it, you know.
And know that it's okay to not get things right. And I think it's so often we look outside of ourselves at our kids and we go, oh, I need to fix that thing. And when you hear that voice, go back in and think, why? Like, what is it that's telling me there's something wrong?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you're wrong to think there might be something wrong, because you need to tune into that because it's a signal.
Mm.
But is it correct? And is it them that's the problem?
Yes, I love this. This should be the mantra of life.
Yeah.
What's underneath? Where did that come from? Take a pause. I love something else you share. I love everything you share.
Oh, thank you.
I've got to be honest.
You.
I'm like top fan. I should get a top fan badge.
I should do that. I should do, like, you've got lemons that you can give people. I need to think of something.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I can't really make something. A hug, though, can I? How do I do
that? I feel hugged by your...
Do you? Oh, good.
Yeah, I feel hugged after I've heard
you. That's what I'm trying to achieve.
And I think what I love a lot about the balance that you create is that you bring other people in when it's helpful, and you bring yourself in, and you're not afraid to bring your full self in. Mm. And so I don't feel that you are sat there with all of the answers, not having lived it yourself.
Yes.
I feel like you are living this, and I can therefore feel like I'm a mutual with you.
Oh my God, that is the essence of what I'm trying to achieve. Because
you are
honestly,
achieving it.
We are assailed day and night on social media and just generally by experts. And I thank every single one of those experts. I'm so grateful to you for sharing your knowledge. The problem is that there's an element of them talking down and me thinking, why don't I know this? What's wrong with me? Why did I not? Right? And we need to be kind to ourselves and say, because I was never brought up knowing this. And does it matter too much to me and my family? Because that's the other thing I try to say to people is, I can't tell you exactly what to do. You need to listen to each one of these people and go, how would that work with my family?
I love that.
Because we're not all the same, right?
Yeah. That comparison element of looking of what else is out there and thinking, I'm less than.
We've all done it.
I can't reach. Apparently, it's infiltrated. You know, I often will say to my middle daughter, when she's had sort of low-level anxiety and then it spikes, I'll say, what have you been feeding yourself with recently?
Yes.
What's been coming in? Something you said that I absolutely loved was, you know, we can talk about all of the stuff that's out there that's really worrying, that's deeply concerning. And I don't want to deny all that stuff. But also, you shared, I'm full of hope. And I actually believe that there, forgive me if I'm misquoting you, but, you know, I believe that, that we need to be showing that other side of life. That 100%. Is, because there isn't enough of it, is there? There isn't enough of, this is a, life is amazing and a privilege and a gift for most of us, you know.
It is, and I think that this is more urgent now than it's ever been before because of the online push for extremism. And when I say extremism, I mean in every type. And what I mean by extremism is the way you become really well known online is by sharing inflammatory things. And then that drives it, whatever it is. And you know, I'm not picking a side, I'm not picking anybody in particular. That then drives attention. And we have an attention economy online. So it's all geared up for that. And actually what we need to be doing is pulling our kids back into real life and saying, yeah, but look around you. Look at how lovely that lady down the road is. Look at how kind that man is who's just built that thing for that person, right? Just because there's so much noise in the system now that there was never there,
there.
And so our counterbalance needs to be much stronger, and watching lovely stories, lovely films that have a narrative arc where they resolve and they give our kids that kind of, it's okay.
Yeah, it's going to be okay. Yeah. I will be okay. This will be okay. Yeah. I'm so into that. I also, I mean, one of the values that Sam and I parent by is to be unafraid of the difficult conversations and to balance out perspective, big picture.
Yeah.
What's the little detail here? Now what's the big picture?
The
You know, we always talk about, like, are we in connection? Are we communicating regularly? We're obsessed with, like, sharing circles. I think now our older girls will be like, again.
Oh, another sharing circle.
Another one. But they still will say they're so valuing of it.
Yeah.
But then the third thing is shadow and light. Shadow and light.
Yeah.
Can we live with the, like, this all began because we had a third daughter that died of a virus when she was a baby. She caught a virus and she was just too little to fight it. And the impact on our eldest especially, but the impact on us as a family at the time that it happened as well, we had a choice. So we go with what a lot of the surroundings was going with, which was kind of avoid the pain, sweep it under the carpet. We're really sorry this has happened, but we can't almost handle our own pain over it. So let's look at this thing over here. And they used to say things to our children like, you'll see her again in heaven, or
because they're trying to avoid their own pain, the difficulty of having to navigate
it. It made me mad. It made me just rageful, actually. I was like, they're not going to see her again in this lifetime, in this consciousness, and whatever is out there right now, that's not what they need to hear. They need to feel this loss. I need to feel this loss. So we made this sort of commitment. Tell them the truth about life. Let them feel their pain. At the same time, you don't want to tell a young child stuff that blows their perception of the world, but they're going to find those blow moments all the time. So it was about how do we balance it? And that's become our mantra. Life, you know, right now we're struggling to pay the rent some months. There are some big financial worries. But do we live in that all the time? No, we don't live in that all the time. There's woodland just there that we can walk in and smell. You know, there's connection with each other, there's coziness, there's love, there's safety, there's food on the table. You know, and even if there wasn't food on the table, we're okay.
I feel that so strongly, and I say that to my kids all the time, you know, because sometimes they've asked me, you know, what would you do? We lost all our money. I'd say we'd just stick together. And we'd rebuild. And I know that sounds really just throwaway, but if you have a unit, you can do a lot of things, not everything. You can do a lot of things. And I would do any job. I've done most jobs. Like, I am absolutely fine with doing any job that it takes to put food on the table. That would not be a problem for me at all.
I love that. And that that kind of tenacity of, this is our scenario right now. This is just another story that we're living.
Yes, I love that.
This is, I say to them all the time, it's just enough, the amount of times we've had to move when we haven't wanted to.
Right.
Because we can't yet afford, it's too expensive to buy for us. Oh, I'm getting notice again. And so your heart sinks and you've got to go to the children again. Say, we're going to have to move. It's just another experience.
And how do they feel about that moving? What do they
say?
Well,
our girls will tell you that that was very traumatic for them growing up. Mm. We've had 12 moves, I think, in 20 years.
That's kind of my childhood.
Was it? Mm. And they say they really missed their consistency of friendships. Mm. Wherever we've moved, we've immediately built community. We've lived in community most of their upbringing. We just seem to be able to gather people. But coming back to the UK has not been possible to do that because we can't find properties big enough. In Spain, we lived in big properties and people just came.
Yes.
And it was an incredible
way to live.
And
it's a different attitude there. It's a very,
very different,
much more communal way of seeing things.
If there wasn't enough money, you didn't need to worry about food. The whole community brings you food, you know. Mm. You don't even need to say it too much. People kind of just knew. It was a very different vibe.
Isn't that interesting?
And also, interestingly, coming back to this country, the amount of people that would say, why have you decided to come back here? And I want to be met with, welcome back.
Isn't
a different, you know, they're just a different energy.
Negativity.
I'm curious for you to tell me about, as a mother, and because you're raising two children that you didn't birth, two children that you did, in an environment where you've left full-time, pretty full-on work, your career sounded like committed.
Oh, very, yeah.
Did you leave work and go into that kind of motherhood straight away, or did you do it gradually?
I did a postgraduate in postgrad in broadcast journalism, which was the best course. There were, I think, two or three courses of that level in the country, and they're very competitive to get into. So I was thrilled that I got into it. And by that time, I had made enough money to do the course because you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
So I basically worked every Saturday. I worked for NBC for free to just find out how it worked. Mm-hmm. And then I saved money, school, and then I did this course. And then I was launched immediately because it's such a great course that you have everything they need.
Yeah.
So I went straight into journalism. I went straight up like this. So I ended up BBC correspondent. I did. I was a world news anchor for CNBC Europe. But
Brilliant.
None of it really filled my cup because I'm actually much more interested in the nerdy nitty gritty behind.
Okay.
Like I was put on camera a lot because I'm comfortable on camera. Like I don't flinch. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah. You were gold for them.
Well, they like, that's what they need,
yeah.
Right? But actually, I'm much more interested in all the nerdy stuff in the background and the research, and that they don't really fit that well together because if you're on air a lot, they end up taking those jobs off you.
Right.
Because, like, I was writing my own news, but it's just you're kind of churning stuff out rather than really deep thinking. So I found that frustrating. I like being a correspondent because that's much deeper thinking. But so I sort of got to the point where I was like, I'm going to have to go all the way back down this chain, back up again to get into that more research side, or I can just leave.
Mm.
And so, long story, but I ended up applying for a course in nutritional therapy at university.
Wow.
Got on the course. Which was weird because I didn't actually, you were supposed to have biology and chemistry A levels, and
right,
I'd never
nothing.
Done any science because of the schooling I'd had. And I just said, she said, this is the best application we've ever read. But what about the science? No, I'll pick it up really quickly. And I did. And that's why I'm always with my kids. I'm like, you know what?
You're a can-do person.
Yes. Follow your dreams. Don't let people say, no, you can't.
Yeah.
And, you know, my friend who's a surgeon, she had no science.
Yeah.
Went back in, studied science.
I had
science.
No qualifications for what I got into.
Right?
I just sold myself.
This. Yes, and this is actually one of the great things, like the positives about the world, rather than saying you need to be perfect, actually saying, oh, that direction didn't work, I'm going to try something different.
Mm. And question.
Question all the time. So I was doing this course, and I was in my second year of the course, I'd worked all summer, with this massive belly, and someone had said to me, so what are you going to do about that? I went, oh, I'm just going to go part-time for a year and then I'll come back. And she said, it's your first baby, right?
Yeah.
I went, yeah. And then she walked off.
Now we know how ridiculous that was.
But right. Yes. So that's, I hit a wall.
Yeah.
And I had nobody around me with kids. I used to go into cafes in London with my baby like this, looking around, like looking at other people with babies and going, and then they would ignore me. And I think, oh. Yeah. I'd just be lonely on my own.
Wow.
I mean, and eventually I found my way to meeting people, but it's not, you have, so I know somebody Jen Cook, and she's amazing, the most amazing person, because she moves and she basically builds a community almost instantly because she knows exactly how to do it. And this is a skill and an art, and because she's so generous and such a warm person, people just pick up. And that's one of those skills I'm trying to teach my kids. Like, I'm looking at people going, how do you do it? Right. And my daughter who's just gone to university, I'm like, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
Right? We need to teach these skills.
Yes.
Because they're not around. They're not, they don't have an example.
Yeah. That is absolutely key. And especially at university, I think the myth is it will all come very easy. And I don't think it does.
It doesn't.
Does she respond well to you doing that? Do your children, like, hear you and listen to you?
Yes, and I'll explain, because one of the things that I think is the most important building block is love and showing affection and love and connection. If you don't have that, nothing else works. And part of showing love and communication is being prepared to go into their space, not always expecting them to come into your own.
Nice.
When they come into the house, you show them that you're interested. You actually stop what you're doing and look and just take some time for them, because you had these children. Like, they should be the most important thing when they're there. It's very brief when they're teenagers. It's not going to spend a huge amount of time, so don't worry about that. I mean, sometimes they rabbit on a bit, but mostly it's, you know, and letting them know that you're just genuinely interested in their feelings, and also having boundaries. And when my kids push against the boundaries, I'm like, well, isn't it awful that you've got a mother who cares enough to say no to that? And I'll explain to you why, and I'm prepared to listen to you. And my youngest is very, she pushed back really hard, and we've got the most amazing relationship now because I was prepared to listen to her. And when I was wrong, because I have been wrong, because that happens, right? We're all fallible. I would go, yeah, you've got a really good point there.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry. I'm going to try to do things differently.
Yeah.
And we found ways where she'll tell, she now parents me on how to parent her.
Okay, I have so got this going on in my family too.
Have you?
And I love it. When it's happening, I'm like,
ooh. It can feel really hard.
Maybe you can give me some advice.
Yeah, I'd love to.
I'm going for a thing at the moment with my son. So he was raised in Spanish culture, Spanish school. You know, he never remembered living in England. We left when he was very small. He did not want to come back to England, but he loved the school environment. I love wearing a uniform. I love the structure of the days. I love the...
I was like that.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, really. I mean, I was so shocked. I thought, all that freedom and that very tactile community, like his teachers used to hug him and kiss him, and sometimes the lesson would be abandoned and they'd go and do something else, you know, very relaxed.
Yes.
I used to wonder, what on earth are they actually learning?
They're learning.
But he was super into that culture. So to have this reaction, I was like, this is amazing. And I was really glad for it. And I'll say that he goes to the best secondary state school that there is in the area. Now, Zebedee is a child, he's unusual. He's just turned 13. Everyone says this about him. He is deeply loving. He's very, he prefers almost to be with older generations. That's slightly changing now, and he loves his skate group and he loves his boyfriends and his community there, but he loves older people. He does jobs for the old ladies. He would serve at the village hall if they've got an event on. You know, he's very heart-centered. He is unusual. And what we love about him the most is his commitment to justice. What's right, and how can we take our place in that? I've noticed this shift and change in him recently in school. When he comes home from school, he's starting to say, I don't want to be at school. I can't breathe there. You know, I'm claustrophobic. He's had two incidences in the last few months where two different teachers have given him detentions for doing something that he didn't do. So the first one, he just was in the wrong place at the wrong time. The teacher didn't know who had done it. So immediately picks on the tall, articulate one in the group, just shouted, you've got a detention, did it? But sir, can I explain? No, you can't explain. Don't talk back to me. Detention. I said to him, would you like me to help with this?
No, he doesn't.
Oh my God, I get called a Karen.
No.
Do you know, have you heard about that?
Yes, of course I
have. I had to Google it. I was like, what is that? Mum, don't be a Karen.
Karen's an interfering white woman. Yeah.
Right. Well, okay, that's probably me at times. I'm not interfering, because actually when he said no, I said, I was totally honour that. He went in the next day and he went to the classroom and said, "Not, sir, can I come in and talk to you about what happened yesterday? I want to explain." Shouted again, "How dare you undermine my authority? You turn up for that detention, otherwise I'll escalate it. Get out of my classroom." So this is a boy that only does good, right? He's not a naughty kid at all. And even if he was, he's the sort of person that would be like, "I'm going to detention. Mm. I did wrong." He wants to do that if he's done wrong. All his other teachers say to us and parents, "Your boy, we need to get him teaching. Where does this come from, you know?" So then he's had this second so I wrote to the teacher. When the teacher wrote to me and said, "You know, please can you have a word with your son? He needs to turn up to detention." And I wrote back and said something very un-Karen. I tried to be as un-Karen as possible and just shared our perspective about how we kind of relate here and that we would value Zeb having a voice.
Mm.
And I was told, "You either like me or don't like me as a teacher, but I am the teacher. This is the way it is."
Mm.
So then the next incident was last week with different teacher, same thing. The boys were mucking around in the classroom, throwing a young boy's bag around. The bag gets to Zeb. Zeb says, "We're here to do computer science." Picks up the bag, goes to take it back to the boy. Gets shouted at for standing up. "You've disrupted my class. Sit down. You're going to get a detention." "Please, sir, can I explain? I'm just..." "No, you can't explain." Again, he goes after the class. "Can I share with you what happened?" "No, you can't. Don't undermine my authority."
Mm.
Shut him down. So he came home to us and just said, "I am sick of this.
Mm.
I'm doing good and I get chastised for it. I am not allowed to explain myself. I am not allowed to share anything about my perspective or my feelings. And I've got to turn up." He said, "I'm not turning up." And what I'm seeing in him is he's getting angry.
Mm.
He's getting angry.
Poor kid.
I don't want to lose my boy to this.
No.
What do I do? Because I don't want to be a nosy neighbour. I don't want to be one of those Karens.
This is such a problem, I think, across a lot of schools. It's not just this school. And on LinkedIn, there's a lot of people talking about this stuff on Twitter. And it's trying to get the balance right between being authoritarian and too permissive and getting that authoritative, you know, middle ground, which is high expectations, high support.
Right.
As this is what David Jager would call it. But that's basically what the schools are trying to do that. Some schools subscribe much more closely to the authoritarian rule. And it sounds like he's in that kind of school. It sounds like those two teachers have that attitude towards...
Not
how,
on their
how
values, though, on their website. They speak of the opposite.
So that's an interesting one. And so also your son sounds very like my youngest daughter.
Really?
Very, very similar, where she's got a super strong value compass.
Mm.
And actually, if people try to tell her something that she doesn't don't align with her values, she will push back.
Mm.
She'll question everything. She won't just accept it. Whereas the other kids, I know, because I've had them, will just go, "Oh, yes, and they'll do whatever it takes to just stay out of trouble.
Yeah, keep the peace.
Yeah, and he's like, "Wait a second, this is not right."
Yeah.
And I think there's also an element of boys being more harshly judged than sometimes girls are for their rambunctious attitudes. And if he's tall, they've just seen him. And, you know, it's super unfair in that respect. So if these are their values, if this is what they're saying on their website, it might be worth, because I've done this with a school before where I have actually, somebody on the WhatsApp group, see, WhatsApp groups are just poisonous.
So
you have to be careful who you're talking to. But it's kind of even just speaking to other parents and saying, "Is anyone else getting this?" And not turning, so... If you become a raging animal going in and marching in and saying, "You've got to change this," they will just put their blinds up and they will protect themselves and everybody in the room. The way to tackle it is to get other parents, maybe somebody who's on the school committee or whatever, and just say, "You know, I'm seeing this and I don't know whether it's just my son or whether it's happening with other people, but here are the values they're setting out and here's what we're seeing. And I know that this isn't what they want." So it sounds to me like these teachers need some more support.
Yeah.
The teachers are human beings. They're tired.
It's a hard job.
Yeah. Then they're doing, it's just a challenging job and job at time. And sometimes my daughter comes home and says, "Oh, this teacher did this." And I'll listen to it. And then I'll say, "Sounds like she was having a bad day and it wasn't probably you.
Mm.
It was just that they're worried about their authority. And I know from talking to a male teacher who was in a school, it was an all-male school before, he said, I used to have to brace myself before I'd go into classrooms because I'd be really, you have to show your authority because teenage boys are ready to pull down anyone who shows even an ounce of, you know, not being able to cope.
Yeah.
And so there's also that. There's also that where he may be misreading the information and thinking that's, a, you know, they're causing trouble. I have to look firm. Otherwise, I lose everything. Mm. So if you look at it in the round and you say, OK, this is how they've set out their stall, because if they've actually said we are this and then that's it's not coming through in the teaching, I would go in through the side and say, I'd really love to have a conversation about how you managed to filter this value system across the school and support teachers more, because it sounds like they're...
I love that. It's a much more compassionate approach. Yeah.
And I think also, human beings.
Exactly. And I don't want to put blame anywhere or judgment.
Yeah.
And I also totally understand, how on earth do you give everybody a voice in a room of 30?
And you can't. And you can't. And what they need to do is they need to have the tools to be able to say, so these, so the other things, we need men in classrooms. We do not have enough men in classrooms. Mm. Boys are growing up without any men in their lives. And I know they've got men at home, but the men are doing their thing. So they've got that.
Yeah.
And then in, you know, in nursery schools, it's almost no men at all.
Yeah.
Primary schools, fewer and fewer. Right, sorry, a few more. And then secondary schools, it's maybe about 30%. I don't know. Different schools are different. But we need men in the classrooms. But what we need to do is give them tools for managing what is difficult and saying, OK, so this a better way of managing that situation. But that needs to come from within the school environment in a supportive way.
Yeah.
So that they say, here's a way, here's, you know, like how there's a really great guy I interviewed. What was his name again? I've forgotten it such a long time ago. But he has a podcast for teachers about how to manage classroom situations.
Ooh.
And there are so many of these situations that become very difficult. And children maybe who are neurodiverse and having to, what he calls, land the plane when a child has become difficult. And there are more of them now, actually.
Absolutely.
So it might be worth pointing them in that direction, saying here is a person who lays out tools for teachers that they can use.
Yeah, yeah. One of the kind of impulses I have is to share with them about two types of training that I'm obsessed with, absolutely, like, continue to go back into it myself just to get deeper into it. One is authentic relating training. Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Just for everyday life, all relationships are impacted by it. And it's easy and accessible, I think, to the majority.
That's what we need.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the other one is conscious leadership training with this amazing guy called Greg Kendrick.
Mm.
And I do that every week still. And I'll do it for as long as I can because we can never get enough.
Yes.
And if our teachers could have the support to know how to juggle those balls without losing that boy's heart, I guess.
Because
and trust.
Yes. Because that's at the heart. So right from the very start, I said the most important thing is a connection.
Yeah.
And when a child connects with the teacher, because, okay, kids don't learn from books.
No.
They can, but they learn because they are motivated because they connect with somebody. That's
absolutely
how it works. Yeah. They've connected with their friends and they want to prove themselves. They've connected, whatever it is. But those teachers need to focus on connection as the most important tool they have.
Mm.
And once you lose that connection, you lose that respect and that trust from a child, it can be very, very, even more challenging. And knowing that is really helpful for teachers.
Yeah.
A lot of them don't have the skills.
I think that's true. Mm. It's not in their training, is it?
No.
If you could get rid of school altogether, what would be the replacement?
Okay, well, it's a really interesting thing because there were people working on this. There's the Alpha School.
I love your brain. Your brain.
I'm fascinated by everything. I was saying this. There's a woman called Jennifer Sundberg who created this company for directors, and she's kind of stepped back from it, but she sold a lot of her shares, made huge amounts of money out of it because it was so brilliant and so successful and is still really thriving.
Brilliant.
And it's how directors manage themselves, I can't remember. But so she's gone into how do you teach younger kids, sort of 8 till 12, how to have critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sent me this podcast, because we talk all the time about these things. And it's a guy talking about alpha schools and what they're trying to come up. It's, I think it's in Austin, Texas. And so much is happening in Texas at the moment. It's fascinating.
Yes, I know this.
Do you know that? Yeah. Isn't it interesting?
Things I'm, things I love. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's all happening
it's
there.
It's happening there. Yeah. I think of them as 10-gallon hats or whatever they're called.
Yeah.
But the alpha school is a model where they're using AI to, he calls it two times or three times learning. So you're learning at a higher speed because the AI is adapting very quickly. Five pupils per person who's like a coach. And then the rest of the time, they have time to do other things, other learning.
Wow. Whether
it's
sports.
And it's just the most amazing, incredible thing. And I'm looking at it going, wow, that is really interesting. Because it's more about the people acting as coaches, not as teachers.
Mm, love it.
And it's like, it's a bit like flipped learning where, you know, the Khan Academy was based on this, where what you do is you tell the kids, learn this at home, like watch this video. And some kids, it will take them three passes. Mm. Some of them will stop, have to keep going back. Some of them go straight through. And you can see, like, how did they cope with this? And then when they're in the presence of someone who's a coach or a teacher, it's more like, let's practice it. Well, how would we do this, right? That's a different way of learning.
Yeah.
The problem with the alpha school that I see myself, which I said to Jennifer, was it's really expensive. Mm. This is so expensive. And one of the reasons it's so expensive is when the kids are not in that kind of learning experience with, who's paying for all these other things they're supposed to be doing? Because what we have to remember is the other side of schooling is it's childcare.
Yes.
I'm very sorry, but it really is.
Yeah.
And there's this kind of halcyon idea of what it used to be like when kids could roam free, all the teenagers were out in the wilds, you know, drinking, smoking, shagging, all those things that have dropped off a cliff because they're all on their phones now, which is terrible. But people forget that they actually had lots of problems with disorder.
Right.
Public disorder.
Yeah.
You can't just let kids go and roam the streets. Yeah. They have to be occupied somehow.
Yeah.
So it's channeling that. So you could say, let's get rid of schools and all kids will learn their own way. Kind of won't.
Yeah.
They need guides. We need to guide them.
Yeah.
So they need people in their orbit who are mentoring them, guiding them, helping them. So at the moment, I think what's happening is we know that the school system at the moment isn't fit for purpose.
Mm.
It just isn't. But it's not, we don't throw it out because we need it.
Yeah.
We need kids to learn.
Yeah.
And we're trying, I think a lot of people are coming through the ranks going, okay, how do we do this?
Like that. That gives me hope. And I also want to just remember our theme, I think, that's coming through today is that it's not all bad.
Oh, my goodness, no.
There is so much goodness in the schools.
Yes.
Yeah.
People are genuinely trying to, look, people don't go into teaching thinking, I just want to make life hell for kids.
Mm.
They don't do that. And, you know, there are different models of teaching. So, for example, there are people I either love or hate. She's Marmite, Catherine Burble Singh, who created the Michaela Academy in North London.
Okay.
And she has got, it's a state school. She's got a diverse community, a lot of Muslims, Hindus, Christians, people from different faiths who are coming together in one school. And she's gone, how do I do this?
Yeah.
She is a child of immigrants. And she's looked at it and going, okay, so, you know, you can't eat halal meat. You want halal meat, you can't have milk with, you know, you're Jewish, so you can't. So what she's done is she's gone, right, well, let's just get rid of the meat.
Right.
We'll go vegetarian.
Yeah.
And then she's created tables where everybody has to, they are basically placed at the tables. There's one teacher at each table. This is lunch tables. They have a vase of water and it's one person's turn to pour the water for everybody else. So they learn this sharing.
Nice.
And the conversations are controlled. Now, some people absolutely hate her system because they're like, well, you're controlling kids.
Right.
But her results academically are exceptional, and the kids learn to be in part of a community. So what are we trying to achieve?
Mm.
Some people don't want that, but we have to find a way of creating community. Schools do much more than teaching XYZ.
Yeah.
Schools, they create a community.
Yeah.
Shared values.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A place for children to socialise and learn, because most of the problems we have in our lives are, how do I make enough money to live?
Yeah.
How do I deal with other people?
Yeah.
Because other people are the problem, right?
Yeah.
It's not us. We're great. We're
Never.
Perfect.
Yeah.
But it's like learning how to manage relationships with other people. And that happens in a school environment, right?
Yeah.
And all those horrible moments where your kids, you know, not bullied consistently, because that is awful, but, you know, where they have a fracas or they, you know, what they're doing is they're learning.
Mm.
I didn't like what that person said. What do I do? Do I fight them? Do I shut them down? Do I try and be conciliatory, right?
Yeah. How did that work? How did that go? The reflections.
Right.
Yeah.
And while we're parents, while our kids are young, it's horrific because our kids are coming home saying, I've got no friends and Johnny did this and this teacher did this. And but what they will learn. So your son is learning something that's really not very pleasant at the moment. But he's also going to learn. So he's learning that actually going in sometimes doesn't work. Like going in telling somebody, and he's going to learn other ways. And some of them won't be as good. Or they might be better. But what he's doing is he's going to find those people somewhere in life. So when he confronts them in a school, if we create a school environment where you never have these difficult people, they're going to get out of school, and the first time they hit them will be in the workplace when they don't have a parent sitting there going, maybe you should try this, and maybe, right? So don't panic and think, oh, you know, the life is over.
I've lost my boy.
You think, you know what? This is kind of, we learn.
Yeah, and we work with these, this. Yes. I feel, honestly, the nervous system just dropping as you're sharing this stuff. I feel like I've suddenly just expanded inside, that I can actually tackle this in a much more awakened way than potentially me going in on the minutiae. And I think also I just want to remind myself to get really creative with all of the options he has. He's got options.
And help him be creative. And actually for my daughter, who was similar to him, she stayed so long. So she has gone through difficult environments and been with difficult people. And she, and I've said to her, you know, you don't have to stay. Like, we can find a different answer. And she went, no, I'm staying. I'm going to stay. I'm going to stick this out, because she knew it was good for her to go through that and out the other end. And then she left.
So she did, and then,
Chose. And we navigated her out of situations. So she had her pride intact, and she knew that she had managed it, and she'd learnt what she squeezed that lemon, and she had got all the juice out of it and gone, right, I'm just going to move on now, learnt that lesson next.
I could talk to you for days.
I'll be back.
Okay, so the topic I'm curious about is a bit of an obsession in our house for various reasons, but in the world at the moment, there's such a massive message of be aware, this, you know, that all the dangers of the corruption, of the abuse, of the dark side. There's so much of that. And in my work, I see a lot of impact on issues around relationships, sex, sexuality, intimacy, and everything in between. I'm passionate about raising children and teenagers and young adults to be really at home with the shadow and the light of sex and sexuality. I was raised in an environment where we really did not talk about it. And I was raised in, my dad was the pastor of a big church. And I was told a message about sex and sexuality that wasn't helpful. It didn't protect me. And I had lots of it. I'm writing a book at the moment about some of this topic. And as I've been writing this book, I've been remembering shocking stories from when I was growing up that I just buried. I knew the obvious ones, but more were coming. Now, I don't want my children to go through that. I want to be able to equip them and empower them and protect them with giving them knowledge and the know-hows. But I also want them to really enjoy and nurture that beauty. You know, and for me, sexual energy is about how creative we are. It's about how we communicate. Sexual energy just replenishes. It's the best energy to use, you know.
It's life-giving.
It is. I can feel how connected you are to your sexual energy, just for how you show up. And yet you're not trying to shag me in the bath. You know, but actually there is this fear around the fact that if we are really deeply connected to our sexuality, we're going to either ask for trouble, get trouble, or we are over-sexualized beings. I don't want my girls knowing that or feeling that or believing that. And I don't want my boy responding to his sexuality in any kind of way that is unhelpful. So my kids are always rolling their eyes when I bring these topics up. And I ask them to listen and to hear, at least so I know they've heard some things when they do. And they're brilliant. How do you approach that topic, or how have you? Because yours are much older now. Growing up,
I mean, there have been times where I've just gone straight in, and so for example with my older girls, I've gone, you know, you don't have to shave or take all of that off down there, you know, that's good, like that's healthy stuff down there, you know. And so I've, and they've gone, and so, and also my daughters have laughed at me in one of my episodes where they said, I was dropping my daughter at a kind of sleepover party, and I knew the parents, I knew the kids, everything. But literally, as I was dropping off, I suddenly thought, oh, I haven't talked to you about this. And I started telling her about
and she's getting out of the car.
And stuff, and she was going, Mummy, I'm 12. And I said, I know, yeah. but I can't, you need to know this stuff. I need to make sure you understand. So I have been caught on the back foot. I'm not always open, really good at making sure the timing is right. but actually, I think I think boundaries and sexuality are part of the same coin.
Right.
And understand it, because it's a to and a fro, isn't it? And there's our own sexuality and sort of like whether you talk to them about masturbation or you talk to them about their own sense of enjoying themselves. Mm. And then there's also the sense of, you know, being with somebody else and how you relate to someone else. Mm. And one of my kids actually ended up having a relationship with a girl, one of my girls. Now that came out of left field because she's always shown an interest in boys. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've never understood homophobia. I've always been a great friend of people in that community because I just kind of connected with them because they just did their own thing and I found them enjoyable to be around. And so I don't really see it as a different thing. I just see it part of a spectrum.
Yeah.
So I was totally fine with her having a relationship with this girl, and it followed a really obvious path, you know, where they're completely in love with each other, and then it fell apart. And actually, in some ways, it was a more deepened, loving relationship because there were two females communicating in a different way from a girl and a boy. So when she's had a friend come over and stay, another girl, I often think, particularly because this girl doesn't have a mother around, I often think it's my job to actually introduce themes into conversations because I know that if I plant that seed, even when I step back, it will start to grow. So this one girl said, oh, and she's older now, she's a university student. She said, oh, I was kind of with this guy and then we started having sex and I didn't know what to do. And then I said, oh, let's stop because I don't know what I'm doing. And I said to her, oh, sweetie, you don't have to know what you're doing because it's performative when you say, oh, I should know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is you're worrying about whether you're performing correctly. Mm. There's no correct thing. It's about how am I feeling?
Right.
And it's about putting that into their head, about centering themselves on how am I feeling? How's the other person feeling? Communication.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing about sexuality, I think.
Yeah.
And that can be playful, that can be, and keep checking in, like, is this good for you? Feeling great about that? And how does that feel when I do that or when I say this? And I think it's a continuum of communication.
Yeah.
With boundaries.
Yeah.
And there's performative sexuality, which I think a lot of kids get a message that they should be doing. Mm.
And know it from know nothing. Like, how do you know it? You know it by doing.
Pornography.
Often,
and they're in a pornified world, and girls are getting messages from a very young age about how they should and shouldn't look, and boys are getting information as well. Mm. And that's why, unfortunately for us parents, what our parents did will not wash. Mm. If we don't say anything, we're allowing our silence is their oxygen.
Yeah.
We are allowing people who don't share our values to guide our kids through life.
Yeah.
And so I'm very clear with my kids that they can ask me absolutely anything. I might go inside and then say, yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah, I love this because you're not shutting them down. And I think it's so important that we don't bring our own prejudices or desires or our own needs over on top of them.
So every time you find yourself saying to your kid, why are you wearing that? Or what are you doing with it? Right? Stop yourself and think, where's that coming from? Mm. Not that you're wrong, but just say, where's that coming from? Is that something my pastor father told me?
Mm.
Or that I, you know, heard on some social media thing, you're supposed to be wearing this.
Mm.
Because there is pressure on girls to be highly sexualized. Mm. And I think a lot of them now are just wearing big baggy clothes. Ones who don't want to go down that path, they're kind of either really, really heavily sexualized or really drowning themselves so that nobody sees their bodies, which I think is absolutely, that's what you want to do because you want to step away from this this really oppressive, scary thing until you feel ready.
Yeah, there is this kind of response, I guess, to the manosphere stuff, which is not new. Like, the people that are talking about this as if it's a new thing, I think, where have you been?
No.
Where have you been?
No.
Even in the mountains of Spain, I knew this was going on, you know? It's not just the boys we need to be talking about. We need to be talking to all of us.
100%.
All of us need to take responsibility for this and not fear it.
Yeah.
Stop fearing it. If we are having the conversations around what does it mean to be a sexual being, we are all sexual beings, whether you acknowledge that or not. What does that mean? What is sexuality? What does intimacy mean? Because it's not sex. You know, what does this look like? What does that look like? How does this feel? How do I interpret my body and what my body is telling me? These are the conversations I want us to be unafraid of and unapologetic around.
And having those with girls too, and not blaming boys. Because one of the things that really bothers me is the extent to which people are saying masculinity, boys, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's hugely damaging. We don't want to make boys feel bad for responding in a way to the world, to something that they're being fed, when we are not giving them a path. So a boy is going to say, how do I become a man in the world? What is masculine? They're going to ask this. And from the age of 10 on, they are looking for status and respect. So they're looking out in the world, not just from us, but it starts with us. If we give them status and respect, that helps. But they're looking out in the world going, how do I get it?
Yeah.
And the information they're getting is not supportive of these really wonderful values, like your son going and helping people in the community and things. So amazing, because he's connecting with people and seeing that, you know, human beings are not these horrible people who have these nasty viewpoints.
Yeah.
And remembering that the women as well, you know, you've got to remember the BOP house and the these OnlyFans people who are trying to sell, market that to our girls. So don't just tar boys with this. Say, look, it's actually happening everywhere. And let's just say, let's come off that and look around you and say, well, what's really happening? And be curious, like say, oh, so my daughter one day said to me, do you know how much these OnlyFans models are making? I mean, they're making, and I said, really? And she said, they're making so much money. I went, are they? How much money are they making? She went, oh, well, I don't know, a lot. And I said, should we look it up? And she said, oh, yeah, let's look it up. And I looked it up, and the average OnlyFans model is making $150 to $180 a month.
There you go.
So I said to her, what do you think about that, darling? Do you think it's worth that? And she went, oh, no. And I said, okay, well, maybe let's be curious.
Yeah.
So you don't have to say that's a stupid thing to say. You just say, gosh, that's really interesting. Should we look it up?
Yeah. Or suddenly fear everything. That she might be thinking she's got to do it because that's the way to make loads of money.
Because she's curious. Yeah. She's curious. Your boys, if your boys find the manosphere somebody saying something, go, wow, that's really interesting. Do you think that's like, where's that stat come from? Should we look it up?
Yeah. And go with them on it.
Yes.
This point that you make is very close to my heart. In fact, the next guest I've got coming into the bath is someone who works with the kind of impact on men when they've been blamed, emasculated and harmed for so long.
Heartbreaking.
And I just, I'm so wanting us to stop talking almost about male and female.
Yes. Yes.
Can we just talk about the human experience? Can we just break down our responsibility to support each other and to big each other up and to call account to each other and not look at this as a man or a woman or anything in between issue?
Yeah.
Can we move away from that?
I completely agree.
It's so boring.
And how ironic is that in the world where we're being told that there's no, you know, gender is fluid and everything? You're like, well, can we just reconcile?
We feed it all the time. We feed it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would be your advice to the world of maybe parents, I would say, at the moment? What is your, what's most alive in you that you want to share?
Always be curious. Just be curious. Be curious about anything and everything. Don't be scared. Be curious. Think, whenever you feel in yourself, whenever you feel you're feeling tired, angry, scared, try and notice that you're feeling that, and that's making you operate in a certain way. Notice it in yourself, because once you start to tune into that, you will get better information about how to then behave.
Yeah.
And then also it will make you better at being curious with your kids. It has to start with us.
Yeah.
So, and then you'll notice when your kids do things, because I remember with my bonus daughters, they would do things and I'd think, oh my God, have you seen what they're doing? This is outrageous. And I started thinking, I need to read a book. Like, I don't understand what's going on here, without thinking, oh, wait a second, what was I like at that age?
Yeah.
And if I'd actually been curious about myself, I would have gone, oh, actually, that sort of rings a bell. But I didn't. I read books, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
So just get curious. And if your kids are doing things you think, whoa, that's a bit weird, just maybe even ask them. And just say, I notice. So don't say, you're always, you're this, you're that. Just say, do you know what I notice? I'm just really curious.
I
see. Do not shame them.
Yeah.
I notice.
I feel, I hope for, I saw that. Yeah. You are so inspiring. Your podcast is something that should be on everyone's desktop. And I'm grateful that you took a risk to come and have a bath with me, having never heard.
You, honestly, about. Bath. When I told my daughters, they were like, "What?" And I just felt, "Come on, you know me. Yeah, I'm always curious. I want to see how wonderful this has been. Look how beautiful this setup
really
is that you've created.
Thank you.
You've got a mood booster candle. I'm sure it's helping.
It is. We always need it. Yeah. But I'm very grateful, and I think that the overriding impact you're having on me is about the effort that you put in, to the commitment you made to have children and to raise children and be around children. You put in effort. And I think my hope is that we learn more and more times where we just slow down and say, I want to make some effort right now with you, for me, for this. Because you exude that. You are efforting and it's paying off, and I want to just celebrate you, your work.
Oh, thank you.
Your parenting. You sound so like an amazing mum. So and I can imagine.
Screamed at my daughter this morning. At her. I went to go and use my hairdryer. Gone. I have like this stand that I've created, I recycled and I upcycled a unit, and I've made it into a lovely banishing table.
Brilliant.
For every female in the house. She stole my hairdryer.
Oh,
I was howling at
her.
Like, don't you dare. But the thing is, we both were fine with each other afterwards. That's the thing. We've learned, she's learned, you know what, it's fine.
Mum's letting off some steam. I won't do that again. We move on.
It's fine.
Yeah, forgiveness. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me. It's been a joy.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. If you're ready to deepen your relationships and learn how to show up more authentically in every part of your life, we really encourage you to check out ART, Authentic Relating Training. It's available worldwide, online and in person, and you can get a nice discount through our affiliate link. We've all done it. It's incredible. It's changed the way that we live life fully. And if this podcast matters to you, your support genuinely keeps us alive and it helps us create this space. You can find everything that you need, links and details and discounts, on our website or in the bio below. Take care.